Margaret Cho is a longtime stand-up comedian who is bringing that talent to Austin for the Moon Tower Comedy Festival. She will be at the Paramount Theater on April 11th at 9:30, bringing her Live and Livid tour to the ATX. And she joins me now to talk about that and more. Margaret, thank you so much for the time. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Thank you.
Good. I don't want to make any assumptions, but considering how long you've been doing stand-up and what Austin means to stand-up, even before these last few years where it's become sort of a mecca, I assume that you've performed some shows here in town. And if so, what are your impressions been of Austin comedy crowds?
Amazing. I mean, I've had like really diverse experiences in Austin too. I've made a record there with David Garza. I've made a lot of appearances, like not just comedy. I opened for Hole at Stubbs. I worked Esther's Follies, Comedy Club's Cap City, also the Paramount many times. So to me, it's just a place I love. I just love to visit. I love to just play music there. I love to make music there. I love to just hang out and eat and wear boots. And, you know, it's just, to me, the best place.
I know when you say Esther's Follies, how legit you are, because that's not always a name of a place that people rattle off when they're talking about comedy in Austin, but it's a great spot to go see sketch comedy and then a little bit more at times. As far as opening for Hole goes at Stubbs, holy cow, that had to have been crazy.
Yeah, incredible. And Courtney's a good friend of mine. Yeah. And but at that time, she was not allowing anybody to go backstage. It was just like this rule. It didn't matter who you were. It didn't matter if you were on the show. You just couldn't go backstage. So I had to crawl onto the stage from the pit. It was really comical. But, you know, she's rock and roll. I love her. And, you know, I'm always there for her, whatever she needs, even crawling up from the pit.
As far as this year's appearance in Austin goes, you are taking part in Moon Tower Comedy Festival, and you're bringing your Live and Livid show, your tour, to Austin at the Paramount on Thursday, April 11th at 9:30. Live and Livid, people shouldn't be totally surprised by those themes if they follow you over the years. What are you most livid about here in 2024 without getting too much into your material?
Well, it's really this show that is about protecting drag queens, protecting women's rights, protecting rights over our own bodies, protecting the rights of trans people, protecting just bodily autonomy, but also the right to drag. I love drag. I've been around the worlds of drag since my infancy. And so it's a community that I deeply, deeply care for. And this horrible attack on drag communities by the Christian right, who are, you know, with such hateful values, the person that would have the most problem with these Christians is Christ. So I'm like kind of trying to bring that message across. And, you know, it's about the show, but it's also to celebrate that we can go back to live entertainment. I haven't been able to go on tour since really like before the pandemic. This is a very big first full scale tour since the pandemic. And so it's great to be doing this live and to celebrate 40 years of doing stand-up comedy.
Wow, that may be a little bit nerve-wracking, but then again, you've been able to work this material out at places like the Comedy Store over the last few years. So I would guess that that tamps things down a little bit, to go along with the fact that you've obviously done theater shows plenty of times in the past too. So it's not like this is a completely new experience for you.
Right. It's just a great celebration. I think people are so excited to go back to see live entertainment. And Moon Tower is just one of my favorite comedy festivals. It's so amazing to be able to come and perform at it again. So I'm really glad to be there.
So there are quite a few of your former Comedy Store colleagues who live here in Austin now. Does it surprise you to see Austin become this this maybe third or fourth rail as it pertains to stand-up comedy, to go along with the Comedy Store in Los Angeles, the Comedy Cellar in New York? Maybe you consider San Francisco, which you're from, obviously, with places like Cobbs. I mean, is it surprising at all to see what Austin has turned to as it pertains to making people laugh on stage?
No, because Austin's always been this incredible artistic center, you know, not just for music, but for comedy and just for people who are free thinkers. I think that it's just Austin is always where I encounter the most surprising artists who do the most incredible things. You know, people like Christine and David and now Joe Rogan, and all of these people are really drawn to this magnetic force that Austin has. And so I'm always really, really excited to go back there.
I was first drawn to your comedy thanks to your sitcom on ABC back in the mid-1990s. I was a teenager in the 90s. I thought that show was hilarious. And I didn't realize this until researching for this conversation that All American Girl, it wasn't canceled per se, but you had a conversation with ABC execs where they were telling you to tone it down, even despite the show's immense success. What is it like sitting in a meeting or through a conversation like that where you know you're crushing it and people who have a strange set of morality, I guess, are telling you that what you're doing so well needs to be done differently?
Well, it's like the idea of what is television versus stand-up comedy. You know, I'm certainly a stand-up comedian, and I'm a very raunchy, raw stand-up comedian in the style of Red Fox,
yeah,
in the style of Richard Pryor. Those are my heroes. And so it's really hard to put somebody like that in mainstream television. You know, it was nigh impossible to do that for Richard Pryor, and only really near the end for Red Fox, which Red Fox, of course, had incredible success in stand-up and, of course, sitcom television. But it took a while to sort of figure out what it was going to be. And then also his presence on Sanford and Son was very, very different from what he did as a stand-up comedian, which if you ever watch or any sort of old, listen to old albums of Red Fox, he's like the most raunchy comedian ever. So it was a disconnect between what I did as a comedian to what I do as an actor or as a sitcom performer.
Do you like having to shift gears like that and maybe cater a little bit more to the people who are viewing or listening to you, depending on the different levels of entertainment, whether you're talking about stand-up or the Broadway show that you're putting together right now for next year, or something like television or a movie?
Yeah, I'm absolutely happy to adapt because I think that's what's so exciting about what I get to do as an actor and an artist and a stand-up comedian. You know, like I get to be in all sorts of different projects, not only my own that I've developed, like my stand-up comedy, but other people's visions of what they want to do. So I've been in Disney TV shows, Disney movies, which is really, really cool, and then gone to do different things in music. So I really enjoy the adaptability of my job.
It was interesting to learn also, Margaret, that losing All American Girl really forced you to focus more on getting better at stand-up. That was a little bit surprising because you made a name for yourself initially in stand-up. So how did that make you better as a stand-up comedian in the aftermath? Was it just a matter of you putting that much more effort into getting up on stage night after night to get better at the craft?
Yes. And also, I think that the best stand-up comedians are really older. You know, they're people in their late 30s, 40s, 50s, and beyond. You know, those are my favorite people often. And we just get better as we get older. And so I think that it was a chance for me to really get serious about what I was doing. You know, like at the time when I was doing television initially, I was just a college comedian. I mean, I've been doing comedy since I was 14, but at the same time, I didn't have the life experience to apply to my work as I do now. So it's been a long journey within this art form, and I still haven't figured it out, which is what's great about it.
Is that right? You don't feel like, I mean, you surely figured it out a little bit more versus 30 years ago at this point, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Gets closer, but then it gets farther away, you know, and also with the way that the media is, that the way that people ingest news is so immediate and so vast. So we have a new opportunity now to talk about topical issues that we never had before because everybody's really on the same page about so many things. So it's a really interesting time to actually go at things as a political comedian. I think it's something that we're all trying to figure out.
So does that mean that you're doing a little bit of writing on the road and testing new material out as you're going through this tour over the next several months?
Yes. So it's adapting to what's happening to the moment. But at the same time, the core message is really the same. It's like that we have to stand up for our own rights as queer people, as women, as Asian Americans, as people who are different, political progressives, all of us, we have to actually put our voice out there. This is a really important time.
So I wanted to ask you this as a member of the LGBTQ plus community, because this topic came up at South by Southwest last month. It's a new Nick Kroll film, and I apologize, I do not remember the title of the film, but Nick Kroll plays a gay character in this film. Nick Kroll is straight. So for a long time now, white people playing Asians is not good. That's considered yellow face. It's something that everybody from John Wayne to plenty of other people did. David Carradine kind of made a career out of it. And then blackface is obviously a very bad thing that we should not see. Maybe get away with it if you're Robert Downey Jr. in Tropic Thunder, because it is satire and it's digging a whole lot deeper. But playing that character straight, if you will, is something that's a huge no-no. But for whatever reason, and for a lack of better term, gay face is still completely accepted. Do you understand why that is? And do you think there needs to be a change there with regards to straight actors playing gay characters?
I think it depends on how you're framing a role, or if it's something like portraying a gay character who is like a historical figure that, and we've seen that time and time again too, where straight actors have played gay characters,
like Sean Penn with Harvey Milk.
Exactly. Yeah. Like that, I think it's like at that time period, we just didn't have a thought about sort of diversity in casting or giving that opportunity to a gay actor. The thing is that Nick Kroll is so gay to me. I love Nick Kroll. Yeah. He's so gay to me. I don't know. There's people like in Our Flag Means Death. Taika and Reese are both ostensibly heterosexual men, but both of them. But the show is all about their gay relationship, which I buy it. I buy it. I think it sort of depends on, and that might be my own double standard because I love those guys.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I think that ultimately, in general, I would like to give the opportunity to a gay actor. I would like to give the opportunity to a trans actor. There's a real meaning to when we're looking at casting from an authentic point of view. And then there's the where it stops too is like racial divides. Like I absolutely would love to see an Asian actor playing an Asian character. I'm fine with a Korean actor playing a Chinese role, a Chinese actor playing a Korean role. The diversity in there is totally normal. Like to me, that's actually fine. I think that's okay to me. But
whereas Scarlett Johansson playing Japanese or Korean, that's maybe a little bit over the line.
It might be out of the realm of understanding, because I also, that's such a Japanese iconic role.
Yeah.
So it's odd to see somebody like that who is very not Japanese play it. So I guess it then that those that air sort of area of like 2012, 13, 14 is when we start to really, really shift our idea about casting and about really understanding we need to have these voices or these faces played by that community.
Yeah, the idea of race is such a fascinating one. I used to, I don't want to say scoff at the idea, but I used to push back on the idea that race is largely a social construct. But you really think about what race is, it's the ability for somebody to guess somebody else's ethnic makeup. And just because you're judging a book by that cover doesn't mean that you always know what somebody's makeup is. For instance, I am more Armenian than anything else. You see the blonde hair, you see the blue eyes, you call BS. You're probably from some sort of Nordic country. And I do have that in my roots too, but I am more Armenian than anything. My family had to escape a genocide in Turkey in the early 1900s. Thank goodness they did. They came and made a better life for themselves in this country. I set all that up very weirdly, Margaret, to say that I heard you in an interview within the last couple of months talk about why you love living in Los Angeles. That includes you being a foodie and loving the variety of foods that you get to eat. And you mentioned Armenian as one of those types of foods that you love. What sorts of Armenian foods do you like the most when you go to an Armenian spot?
Any kind of hats, the bread, hats, like the lavash. And it's such a beautiful cuisine because everything is like, so I do like the lavash with the brined cheese and mint and radishes for lunch, like that. Like I do the classic sort of like Armenian wrap. Everything is so good. I put sumac on everything.
It tastes so damn, it tastes so damn fresh and healthy when you eat those sorts of things, even if it's not always great for you.
Well, it's the food of optimism, because I think the Armenian people needed to have hope in every aspect of their life. So when you eat their food, it's like you have hope in every bite. There's the freshness of the herbs that remind you that we are alive and we are living in this green truth. And it's just so beautiful to me. So I live in a very, very, I live in Glendale. So it's like very central to pretty much Armenia. But, you know, this is, you know, I'm Artsakh strong. So I'm very into it.
Love that. And you got to tell me a little bit about this upcoming Broadway show. I heard you reference it briefly in an interview over the last month or two. It's something you've been working on for 10 years now. So first off, congratulations on getting this close to things. What's up with this show that is going to be premiering in New York at some point in the next 12 months?
Yeah, it's a show that I wrote. It's a one-woman show that I wrote about my mother. So I play her and I play her two sisters. And it's a really... it's like my, you know, when Hal Holbrook plays Abraham Lincoln, I actually have some of the same people that are like helping me with this show. It's the same. It's like the Abe Lincoln experience, but it's me as my mom. So it's a very, it's a comedy, but it's also, there's a lot of very deep elements. It's just all about her journey to America and living here. And it's a really beautiful show. I'm really excited about it. It's a long time coming. So yeah, we just had the first previews of it in January, which went really well. So it'll be back on Broadway at some point pretty soon.
You're obviously a very smart, accomplished person, and smart, accomplished people tend to ask themselves a lot of questions. And at a given point in time, there may be one overriding question that is top of mind more than the others. For you as a smart, accomplished person, is there that one question right now? And if so, what is it?
Well, I think for every comedian too, that they're answering an eternal question. Like we all sort of are answering this question. So mine is, why am I here? And then every part of my work is to sort of to explain that, whether it's talking about race or sexuality or gender, politics, whatever that is, you know? And so that's kind of my thing. It's like, why am I here and what am I doing? What can I do?
Why are you here?
I think it's just to be able to explain. To explain what it is from this perspective, to enjoy things from this perspective, and to find out what I can do better.
What makes Sam Rockwell such a hilarious person? It made a lot of sense to learn that y'all started in comedy together, because even though he's obviously gained recognition as a serious actor, he's hilarious in roles where he's supposed to be funny, especially the dark variety.
He really disappears into every role. Like, he's so different. So I think what it is that he's so engaged in the truth of that character that it can't help, you can't help but laugh, because it's so real to him. It's so true to him. And he was always like that, you know, from when we were kids and doing like theater class and stuff. It was just really amazing what he was able to do. And like, I've known him since he was playing on the Jungle Gym. So it's a very, he's always had it. And it's interesting that he never actually became a stand-up comedian, but he could definitely easily do it. But of course, he doesn't need my advice of what to do. He's doing very well for himself.
I guess we'll have to settle for him as an actor, an award-winning actor. Fine. And last question now, Margaret, what do you love about stand-up comedy?
I love it because, like, I love Armenian food. It's alive. It's like alive. It's like green. It's fresh. It's spicy. It's like minty. It's citrusy. It's like filled with the flavor of life. Like, you're living. It's a living, breathing art form that changes every time you do it. No stand-up shows are exactly the same. They're always different. The audience is such an unpredictable part of that experience. So you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know who's going to come see you, and you don't know how they're going to react every time. You have an assumption, but you don't really know. So I love that fact of it, is that I can come at it new every time. It's always different. It's always surprising.
She is the legendary Margaret Cho. Although I call her a stand-up comedian, she's a whole lot more than that. But calling her a stand-up comedian is a huge compliment in my book. She's bringing her live and livid tour to Austin for Moon Tower Comedy Fest, Thursday, April 11th at 9:30 at the Paramount. You can go to her website, MargaretCho.com to buy tickets and find everything else you need to know about Margaret. Margaret, thank you so much for the time today. This has been a real honor.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
Thanks to Gentleman Jesus for the intro and outro music. Hear more of his work at GentlemanJesus.com. Thanks to you for hanging out. For more of the show and to connect on social media, visit BooksOnPod.com. Talk to you next time, Books on Pod.